Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Crocher. The production of oil is a keystone to Alberta's economy. But despite the tremendous amount of activity and the vast quantities of the resource, getting the oil out of the ground is still a head-scratcher, especially when it comes to oil sands and heavy oil. Through the decades, scientists at the Alberta Research Council have led the way developing new technologies, including those using steam and solvents. Scientist Ron Sawatsky gives a tour of the Council's heavy oil lab. Dr. Bernard Tremblay shows off his wormhole casts. And Brigida Meza talks about the ins and outs of sand in heavy oil. All this coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. A visit to the Alberta Research Council is always interesting. And on this particular day, Dr. Ron Sawatsky is taking me on a tour of the lab where experiments on heavy oil production take place. The large two-story room is filled with all kinds of instruments and contraptions that simulate conditions in the ground and measure what's happening during the different procedures. Because no one can ever see what's really going on in the ground, everything is simulated, extrapolated, and number crunched through computer models.
This is called a pressure vessel, and it's intended to apply a pressure onto the model that we were looking at, similar pressures that you would see in a reservoir, anywhere from 400 to 600 meters below the surface of the ground. So we stick the model in, and as you said, there's all kinds of things coming out of it. That's because we want to measure things. It's difficult to measure things in the ground, but in the laboratory, you want to measure everything you can, and what we really try to measure a lot is pressure and temperature, and measure them at different places in the model. And so you have to have a wire going from each thermocouple and each pressure transducer outside of this pressure vessel. So it gets a bit tricky making sure that everything stays sealed. This pressure vessel can operate probably up to about 1,000 psi. That's 1,000 pounds per square inch. And remember that atmosphere is 14 psi, so it's a lot of atmospheres.
Now, how does this compare to the oil when it's in the ground?
Well, the idea here is to try to use as many conditions as we can that are similar to the way it is in the ground. And one of the things we try to get close is pressure, to be working in the experiments at a pressure that's similar to the ground. When you're injecting steam, of course, the advantage of steam is that it turns from water into steam, and you want to make sure that you have those mechanical properties of steam the same in the experiment as it would be in the field.
Just over from the big round drum is something that looks like a large bank vault. Turns out it's a CT scanner, just like those in the hospital. As Ron explains, using a CT scanner allows the scientists to see what's going on with oil that's so thick, it's easily compared with molasses.
There are no field applications of solvent yet. So what we're doing is looking at the process in the lab and trying to work out conditions where the process would have the best chance. And one of the things we have here is a computed tomography scanner, the same kind of thing that they have in the hospitals. And what you try to look for in this case is the proportion of oil and water and solvent that would be contained in a laboratory sand pack. You can't see what's inside a sand pack when you're doing the experiment. The CT scanner lets you see inside.
It looks like a torture chamber.
Yes, it does. So far, we haven't put anybody in it yet, though, when we've been operating. This CT scanner is an industrial one that we purchased from a company doing that kind of work. There is a source of X-ray radiation and then a receiver, and we put our sand pack with a container around it in between those two things, and there's a machine here that rotates the sand pack and the X-rays go through. We used to use hand-me-downs from the U of A hospital that were truly the ones that were used with patients, and there was a tray that went inside, and in this case the X-ray source rotated around the person, because of course in the hospital you didn't like to turn people upside down. And so we didn't turn our packs upside down either. But now we rotate them around in a circle.
What sort of information do you get from this?
Well, as I was mentioning, we get information mostly about what's called the saturation. That is, where between the sand grains is the water, where is the oil, and where is the solvent. And this helps us test our theories and our ideas and our calculations, because you can do all the calculations in the world, but you want to make sure that you have your foot on the ground, so to speak, and make sure that the calculations you do are rooted in some kind of reality.
Most people are familiar with oil wells and oil that comes gushing out of the ground. But much of Alberta's oil resources are bound up with sand. This stuff doesn't gush anywhere, which leads to all kinds of interesting problems.
We've talked about two kinds of processes for recovering heavy oil that's in the ground. One is to heat it and steam it. Another one is to put solvent in. Another way of getting oil out of the ground when it's not too viscous is to just pump it. In a sense, you're sucking it. This is done quite a lot in Alberta and the area around Lloydminster. The oils there have a viscosity between about 1,000 centipoise and maybe 40,000 centipoise. Water has a viscosity of 1 centipoise. And they've been successful doing that for quite a long time, since the 1940s. In an opposite way to the development of steam recovery methods and solvent recovery methods, these guys did it in the field, and we've only come in the lab to study it later. One of the things they found in the field is if they let sand come into the wells along with oil, they did better. They produced quite a lot more oil, sometimes even 10 times as much. And they didn't require anybody in a lab to work on this for them, they just did it. All it required was some special equipment to lift the sand and a willingness to have to replace pumps and machinery a little more often, because sand is a very abrasive thing and it tends to corrode materials more quickly. But it doesn't always work. On some wells it does, and some wells it doesn't. It works often enough that they do it all the time, but it fails enough that the oil companies decided it was a good thing for researchers to look at. And so we've been doing that kind of work. The apparatus that we're looking at here is indirectly related to that. When you suck oil out of the ground, the recovery isn't nearly as good as when you steam it or when you put solvent in it. You very often get only 10% to 15% of the oil that's there. It's enough to make it worthwhile, but that leaves a lot of oil behind. And what we're working on here are some processes to get some of the oil that's left behind. We've been working on this for the last 5 to 7 years. Companies are now contemplating doing pilot tests in the field. What's turned out to work the best is a solvent process. So it's sort of like that dry cleaning that I was talking about before, but a little bit different. The reservoirs in Alberta and Saskatchewan that are produced under primary production are very, very thin layers of sand, anywhere between 2 meters thick and 7 meters thick. So that's about 5 feet to about 20 feet. And what we've done is construct an experimental apparatus to try to look at the effects of trying these solvent processes at the same scale as in the fields. What we've built is a cone, and it's 3 meters high, nearly 10 feet high, and it's a bunch of pipes in series, each one getting bigger and bigger to the top. And it represents, again, an element in the reservoir, just as we had the element with the SAGD apparatus. And so we do tests in there. We put sand in those pipes. We put oil and water in to get the original conditions, and then we suck on it just as they do in the field. It's called depletion. When we finish that, then we've set up the conditions for the end of this primary process, and then we start injecting hot water when we looked at thermal things, and we inject solvents, pressure the apparatus back up, and then deplete it again and see what happens. And we've done several cycles of this, and we can see that we have some groups of solvents that look like they have some promise and that some companies are going to be testing.
Well, this last pressurized machine reaches several meters tall. The next contraption that Ron shows me is much, much smaller. It's designed to test small packed cores of sand and oil.
What we're looking at here is yet another pressure vessel. This apparatus is part of our program in looking at the first part of the production I just mentioned, when you suck the oil out of the ground. I said that sand production helps oil production. What we've studied here is why it helps, and looked at what effect sand production has on a reservoir. One of the really interesting things about working in this area is that you never know if your ideas are quite right, because you never get a chance to look into the ground and see what's happening in a reservoir. There's nothing that you can use to get an image of it. You can't use a CT scanner. Even putting holes in the ground doesn't work very well because there aren't very many of them. The reservoirs are miles across and you've got just one hole at a few points. So we try to do laboratory experiments to at least see if we're on the right track. This particular pressure vessel is nearly 12 inches across inside, and that entire thing is filled with sand and with water and oil. And then we do depletion experiments where, again, we suck the oil and the sand out of a small hole in the end of it and look at what happens. We can take it apart afterwards and see what things look like. And most of the time in these experiments, and we think most of the time in the field, when the sand is produced, it gets produced in a channel. It's quite different than what would happen if you dug a hole in the ground and kept digging and digging, and eventually the sides would collapse in. That's what happens with soils. But down in the ground, the sand is packed very densely, and the oil is very thick and keeps the sand together. And instead of around the well having a cave-in like you would have at the surface, what happens is that you get these high permeability channels. And a number of years ago, somebody speculated that these things might exist and called them wormholes, and that's what they're still called. He speculated that they might exist because it seemed the only way that he could explain just how much oil was produced. No one found any evidence for the existence of these things, though any experiments that were done didn't show them up. And so the idea kind of fell into disfavor. And then one of my colleagues, Bernard Tremblay, started doing some sand production experiments in 1991 and 1992. And much to his surprise, he found these channels. He didn't expect them. He thought he would get a kind of a cave-in. But instead, he got these channels. And he's been doing experiments like this ever since and keeps getting these channels.
What causes the channels?
Well, the channels are caused by the oil coming into the well. Because the oil is so viscous, it will pull sand with it much, much more than water would. And most of it comes from the end of the channel. It's like a little bump that might appear on the edge of the well, and that little bump gets more oil than the area around it. So it's one of those processes that is sort of self-replicating in that the oil tends to go to the end of the bump, and that just means that you get some elongated channel, and it just keeps feeding on itself and growing out and growing out. And our modeling tells us that out in the field they can grow as far as 200 to 300 meters away from a well. And some oil companies have done some tests studying these things. These are very good for oil production, but they also pose a problem for companies. Everywhere around the oil in these fields, there are layers of water. And if some water gets into these channels, then it's a very good pipe system for getting water. And companies don't get paid anything for producing water, so they don't like doing that. When they have a problem like this, they try to sort it out. About 10 years ago, Amoco looked at this problem in one of their fields, and they injected dyes in the water, and they traced the water from one well to another for over 1.5 kilometers. All these wells were connected with these channels.
Now, is this a good thing or not?
Well, it's a good thing at the start when these channels are having oil produced in them. It's not a good thing when water gets in, because that just short circuits the oil, and that means the end of the process. And we're working on ways to try to fix this problem, but we haven't, and we've come up with some possible solutions. None of them have been yet tested in the field, and there's still a long ways to go. It's a difficult thing for the companies, because when water gets into the field this way, production of oil stops.
That was Dr. Ron Sawatsky, a scientist at the Alberta Research Council. The fellow who is testing his theories on wormholes in heavy oil is Dr. Bernard Tremblay. He holds in his hands a cast of one of these wormholes, which is shaped like a giant bullet about the size of a football.
Well, this is a cast here of what we call a wormhole, which is a high permeability channel that develops in a formation, an oil formation, by erosion. And so what we do is sand production experiments in sand packs, and we try to understand how these wormholes develop in experiments, to then try to see how they develop in the field. And so what we have here is a cast of a wormhole that had developed in a sand pack, and you can see that it's quite large in diameter. It's about 15 centimeters in diameter, But we think that in the field they could get much bigger than that because the size of the region of drainage is much larger.
And when you look at the cast of this, what does it tell you? What would you be looking for?
Well, what we're looking for is, for example, what size these wormholes develop inside a sand pack so that we can then numerically predict what happens in the field. So if we now have a good idea what size they get in the sand packs, we then do some calculations and try to estimate how big they get in the field. And this sort of helps us in understanding what happens in coal production.
What kinds of things have you found out so far?
We found out that these, when these channels develop, they really fracture the formation as they develop by sand erosion. And so eventually they will develop in the field until there's no more erosion of the sand. And after that, there's going to be an open channel that develops. And it acts a bit like a miniature horizontal wells. So you can get a lot of much enhanced recovery if you have a lot of these open channels developing.
How long might it take for one of these worm channels or wormholes to develop?
We think in the field it might develop at half a meter to a meter a day. And so during the first few months you get high sand cuts, and this is when these wormholes develop. And eventually when they start to empty out of sand, then you see that the sand cut, that is the percentage of sand that's produced from a well, declines with time and reaches very low values of maybe 0.1 to 0.5% by volume.
That was Dr. Bernard Tremblay, a research engineer in the coal production group in the heavy oil division of the Alberta Research Council. My tour of the lab was led by scientist Dr. Ron Sawatsky. One person who's turning heads in the heavy oil section at the Alberta Research Council is Brigida Meza. Originally from Venezuela, a country which also has large heavy oil deposits, Brigida has come to Alberta to work on her PhD in the coal production of heavy oil. Her research on horizontal wells is done in cooperation with both the Alberta Research Council and the University of Alberta. Brigida is already making a name for herself with her discovery related to the properties of sand in the heavy oil.
The cost to clean out the horizontal wells is more expensive, so we're trying to get a way to control the sand that we produce in such a way to maintain the advantage of the coal production process, but at the same time decrease the cost that we have right now. So that's what I'm working in.
What is it about the sand that you're looking at that is of such interest?
Okay, it's interesting because we really don't know yet if the process will work. So what we're trying to do is to choose the correct, tools or the correct design. I think that's the best word to use. We should choose the correct design for the wells in order to cut the sand production, but at the same time make the oil flow rate increase. So what I'm trying to do, for example, is choose what is the best slot size and how we can choose that slot size. So we have to, for example, study the sands.
Now, the people here are quite excited about the work that you're doing, the research, and they say that you've actually made quite a breakthrough with your discovery. What is your discovery?
Well, I think the main point is that we say that if you choose the correct slot size, you really can control the sand that you produce. And on the other hand, we found that really you can increase the permeability around the well, and that means that you can increase the flow rate. So increasing permeability, which is a property of the rock, you can or the sand, you can increase the oil production.
Now you're going to be giving a presentation in San Antonio. That's quite exciting.
Yeah. Also, that was very interesting. There is the Society of Petroleum Engineering. They have competition, student competitions, and they start doing competition by chapters. So in my case, for example, I have to go to Calgary and compete with other guys from the University of Calgary, for example, and even from the U of A. And I was selected like number one, so that means that I could go to Kansas, where the other chapter celebrate the competition, which is called the Rocky Mountains, because Canada, I mean Alberta, belong from the SP point of view to the Rocky Mountains chapter. And there it was very nice, and also I got the first prize, so that gave me the right to go to the final one, which is in San Antonio, Texas, where the annual meeting it will be held, which is considered one of the biggest meetings in the petroleum industry. So what I think they like about the work we are doing is that it's very practical. It can be applicable. So, and it's new. It's a process that it's originally from Alberta and Saskatchewan, so it's directly applied to Canada.
How is it that you came across your discovery?
Well, we went to a conference in Calgary like 2 years ago. I went with my technical supervisor from Venezuela, and one person from ARC, they had a talk about sand production or coal production, and we said, wow, that's a good process. It's quite interesting because it's breaking a paradigm. Usually in the oil industry, sand production has to be traditionally a problem, a big problem. And it is a problem still, but they found out that the advantages were overcome the problems. So we say, okay, it's quite interesting. Why don't we try to do something? So that everything began with that.
We're sitting here in front of your computer. Are there some things you can show me about your process on the computer?
Ah, okay, yeah. Right now I'm processing some CT images. That's a computer tomography. What we did was make some sand packs, and then we froze the sand packs, and then we take the sand pack and into the CT scanner, which is kind of the same machine that they use in medicine, right? So, for example, we have here this color scale. So with the color scale indicate, for example, the different variation starting from the original core. And we can, as I mentioned before, determine the improvement due to the process.
So when we look at this, you have a series of round circles, which mainly a tan brown color. Mm-hmm. And then as you go through them, each one is different. It has some have more red dots on them, and some other have less. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Well, it means that because these are slices from the bottom of the core to the top, so it means like it depends on the distance from the slot, you have different kind of variations. So that's what it really means. So it's important for us because we can say, okay, the permeability or the parameters that improve, they improve just 5 centimeters, for example, near the slot, or they improve along the whole core, or they don't improve at all in any place.
So is it better to have more red dots or less?
It's better to have less. It's better to have yellow.
Yeah, you've got a picture here of all different types of sand grains, and it's amazing how different they are. One looks like a moon, and the other looks like a moonscape.
Yes, exactly. Well, that's the idea. We, at the beginning, for example, we thought that the shape of the grain can have some importance in the formation of arches, which is a natural way to stop the sand, right? Remember that we are trying to look for control. Sand production. We would like to produce sand, but in certain quantity, not all the time, and in big quantities because of all the expenses that imply to clean a horizontal well. So yeah, the first thing that you have to do is see if the sand production depends of the characteristic of the sand itself, given a fixed slot size, right? So that's what we did. We did what we call morphology analysis. So we have, for example, sands that were quite rounded, and then sand that they weren't that rounded. We call that subangular to subrounded, and then angular sands. And, well, we start to describe all the tests and all our results.
What were some of the results?
Some of the results, quite interesting, we found that the angularity of the sand not necessarily is the most important part, so it's not as important for if we do have a rounded sand or sand which is not that rounded, it seems like it's not that important as we thought at the beginning, as other people have reported before. Obviously, we're talking always about what the results we obtain under specific experimental conditions. Okay, so that's very important to emphasize. So we found that it's more important, for example, the grain size distribution of the sand more than the shape of them.
So it's distribution that's more important.
Yes, that's correct. That's what we found. And more than that, we found that really the percentage of the big grains in your size distribution are more important than, for example, the small ones. As you see, this is what we call sieve analysis, which we have the percentage of the sand grains versus the opening versus the size of the grain. And you can see here, for example, what we say is that the lower part of the sand, which is the finer one, may be not as important as the bigger grains for the formation of these arches. And here, for example, it was quite neat because we could visualize the structure that formed around the slot in order to stop sand production. And we have different arches for the different sands.
The work that you're doing, what's its significance then to the industry today and how it's operating? What problem is this going to solve?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I think if, still we have to do a lot of work, but if one day we can come out with a procedure and say, listen, this is how you should operate your horizontal well in order to produce the needed sand to have enough oil to make your project successful economically, that will be a great success. But there is a long way to go to reach that point.
Well, it sounds like you've got a long road ahead of you, but you've made a really good start, and I wish you all the best when you go to the competition in San Antonio. Thank you very much, Brigida.
Thank you very much. That was really nice to have you here.
That was Brigida Meza, a PhD candidate from Venezuela. Her research on horizontal drilling for heavy oil sands production is done in cooperation with the Alberta Research Council and the University of Alberta. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. You can listen to past programs on our website at innovationalberta.com. The program is sponsored by the Alberta Research Council, Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, the National Institute for Nanotechnology, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, Alberta Pacific Forest Industries, True North Energy, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, the University of Lethbridge, Alberta Conservation Association, and the Health Sciences Association of Alberta. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.